Thursday morning from 9 till noon. I will have a solid lineup of guests throughout the program, including Teyokesen Ghost Horse. I know you've missed him, and he'll return for this special program along with a quality lineup of other guests. We'll go beyond the myths of happy pilgrims and Indians with an educational and entertaining program. That's Thanksgiving morning from 9 till noon on First Voices Indigenous Radio on WBAI.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming live at WBAI.org. Stay tuned next for Ecologic with Ken Gale.
This earth to share with everything that grows. Don't you want to taste freedom, peace in this life? I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it whole. A parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on following. We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
And you are listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Now, while a lot of anti-environmental candidates won in the last election, a lot of pro-environment ballot initiatives won all over the U.S., including in the same places. So draw your own conclusions. And the movie I'm going to review today is not a hard-hitting environmental movie in the political sense. It's Antarctica, A Year on Ice, and it's someone filming an entire year there, including the Antarctic winter. It's about everyday life in an ecosystem so different, I found it captivating. There's a lot of time-lapse photography, and it's used to great effect. And you really get the feeling of being there rather than just watching someone else be there. It's currently playing at Village East, 2nd Avenue between 11th and 12th Street, and I highly recommend it. Gift-giving season is upon us. Instead of buying from corporations, how about going local? Churches and schools throughout the area have crafts fairs where you can buy directly from the artist. Look for them. I'll be at one in Harlem on December 6th and 7th at St. Mary's Episcopal Church, 521 West 126th Street between Amsterdam and Old Broadway. That's December 6 and 7, St. Mary's Episcopal, 521 West 126th between Amsterdam and Old Broadway. And as I mentioned last show, pipelines that carry methane to be sold as natural gas are being built all over, polluting air and water, damaging health and property values, and in some cases, taking people's homes away from them illegally. The latest pipeline in our area to find public opposition is called the Pilgrim Pipeline, which they want to build between Albany, New York, and Linden, New Jersey. And town after town on the pipeline route have passed bans on that pipeline. People are getting letters threatening their homes if they don't let the pipeline company use their property. And they don't have the legal right to do that. Now, you don't have to fight the pipeline company by yourself. Contact www.catskillcitizens.org, catskillcitizens.org, or call the New Jersey Sierra Club, 609-656-7612, or do both, catskillcitizens.org, New Jersey Sierra, 609-656-7612. And Japan had more earthquakes last Saturday. The epicenter was in the mountains in Nagano Prefecture, and all of Japan's nuclear plants are on the coasts. So this goes in the could-have-been-worse file. The nearest nuclear plants were the seven Kashiwazaki Kariwa nukes, plus two other nuke sites, which are all shut down right now, but they're in the process of restarting them and have brought in foreigners from the U.S. and France to help them do that. There hasn't been time to do a thorough inspection of all the plants, so their announcements that no harm was done to them is premature and shows a lack of forthrightness. I have links to more information on my EcoLinks page. And thanks to Yuko Tonohira, Tim Hudson, and Allegra Dengler for their help in getting us this information. The Center for Biological Diversity announced their 8th annual Rubber Dodo Award winner. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services. Now, with a name like Wildlife Services, you might think it's an agency that's good for wildlife. But they killed more than 2 million native animals last year, a 30% increase from the previous year. More than 12,500 people cast votes in this year's contest. Other official nominees for the Rubber Dodo Award were Representative Doc Hastings, who has pushed to abrogate the Endangered Species Act, pesticide maker Monsanto, and notorious Nevada rancher Clavin Bundy. The center's executive director said, quote, "No other government program does more every day to annihilate America's wildlife than Wildlife Services. This rogue program does much of its dirty work far from the public's view, so millions of animals disappear from our landscapes every year with little accountability," unquote. Most of Wildlife Services killing is done on behalf of the livestock and agriculture industries, along with other powerful interests. The methods include aerial gunning, traps, and exploding cyanide caps. Pets have also been inadvertently harmed. For more information, go to www.biologicaldiversity.org. biologicaldiversity.org. The next meeting of the New York City Safe Energy Coalition, NYSEC, is a week from Thursday, December 4th, at the New York Environmental and Justice Law Project, Suite 701, 11 Park Place, that's near Broadway and City Hall. 6:30 for potluck and socializing. The meeting begins right at 7 p.m., and all of our meetings have begun on time and with music. NYSEC is the first and third Thursday of every month. We have three goals. One, close Indian Point, which is operating with over 100 health and safety exemptions. Two, grow the renewable energy industry from the 40 megawatts now to thousands of megawatts. And three, make New York City buildings more energy efficient. Buildings can be made to use one-tenth the energy they normally use. And in 2 weeks, Ecologic will feature Dr. Sandra Steingraber, who is someone I rank with two of my favorite all-time environmentalists, Rachel Carson and Pete Seeger. She is a biologist who is great at communicating her knowledge and inspiring others to action, but she's also an activist herself and is spending Thanksgiving in jail away from her family because stopping the storage of radioactive fracked methane in New York's wine country is more important to her than one holiday. The show with her will be December 9th, and 2 weeks after that, will hopefully be an internationally flavored show. On my website are direct links to hear past shows on the WBAI archives. It's www.comicbookradioshow.com/eco-logic.html. Environment TV now has more episodes of Ecologic on their page than the WBAI archives do. And that's www.theenvironmenttv.com. They have a searchable website, and you can search for Ken Gale or Ecologic, and also search for the Bee Report to hear Mercy Van Vlack updating you on threats to bees in our food supply. You can also view the episode of Ecologic where one of my guests was the late Ray Corona, whose song Listen to the Earth is part of the opening theme. The last episode of Ecologic was on the new EPA rules to declare nuclear power and methane, even from fracking, as clean. The two episodes before that were 2 hours each. One of the hours was about what happened to the Dene people of New Mexico due to uranium mining disaster, and the other was comparing grassroots and national organizing. All shows are linked directly from the past guest page of the Ecologic website. Also on the website is an EcoLinks page, where you can link directly to the full versions of the stories I summarize in my news and announcements section. www.comicbookradioshow.com/eco-links.html. When your air or water is clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said. And this is a show that I know a lot of you have been waiting for, because people have been asking me, when's Tom going to be on? When's Tom going to be on? I've gotten more email in advance of a show for you, Tom, than I have for pretty much anybody else.
Well, thank you very much, Ken.
And I guess that happens when you do an annual show, and you're right, 5 years in a row. Tom has been coming on here at the beginning of every winter, predicting how cold, how snowy or rainy the winter and spring will be, and explaining why. And people plan vacations based on what you tell them on this show. Now, what's been going on lately with this, you know, it's cold, then it's warm, then it's cold. Is that swooping jet stream thing?
Exactly. This has been a very strange year. And, you know, this changes from year to year. And the pattern tends to be consistent, even though there may be 10 different factors, 7 of which are different each year, but they're coming together. And what's happened this year was quite strange. In fact, I coined a term, La Niñito.
Oh, no.
In order to try to explain this, and by the way, the gender mismatch was intentional. It is such a confusing situation. Earlier this year, in February, we had a beautiful example of what's called the equatorial countercurrent, bringing warm water back east towards South America. The temperature profile is stunning, how that works.
East towards South America from which direction?
Now, this is coming from Australia to South America. That's why it's called a countercurrent. It is counter to the trade winds and the usual currents, which go from east to west. But what happens is that water piles up north of Australia, south of the Philippines. It piles up, and it's warm. And then at one point or another, it shoots backward towards South America. And that's the classic setup for what's called El Nino, except it didn't happen. What happened is that the countercurrent took this warm water over. It was beautiful to see. And then it dissipated. And the reason it dissipated is because there was a lot of cloud cover off the coast of Peru. And cloud cover represents something called albedo, or reflectivity. And we've talked about this before in the show.
Yes.
When you have lots of clouds over the equatorial Pacific, the water underneath it is cooled the same way you're cooled on a cloudy day. But what's worse is that they happen to be usually thunderstorms, and they churn up the ocean. And when they churn up the ocean, they evaporate water. When you evaporate the water, it cools the ocean even more. And that sets up a classic La Nina. Well, we thought that this was going to end with this countercurrent.
So instead of an El Nino, it was a La Nina.
Yeah, well, it started out as a La Nina. It was becoming an El Nino. And then and right now it's, well, they like to call it La Nada, which means neither. But La Ninito sounds a little bit better. The fact is we have a different temperature contrast profile between the equatorial Pacific and the polar region, and the contrast is greater than usual because of that warm blob that headed towards South America. When you have that high contrast, the jet stream begins to undulate. You get these sweeps of warm air heading north and sweeps of cold air heading south. Now, that's only a small part of the situation. The other part happened up in the pole. We know that each year, not every year, but in the last dozen years or so, we've had less and less floating ice in the polar sea around September. And it's due to warm water flooding into the Arctic. And again, the oceans are getting warmer. The oceans have a molecular density, which is about 800 times that of the air. So when people talk about global warming, they're really talking about oceans warming. The air being much less affected, of course, the oceans affect the air, but that warm water is melting the ice from underneath in the polar sea. A couple of years ago, it melted so much, we had a record. 2012, mm-hmm. In September, there was less ice in the Arctic than has ever been before seen since we had satellites in orbit. It got so cold as a result because of snow being deposited around the Arctic because the Arctic was open that we had a colder winter. You had colder temperatures in the polar high, and they swept through Asia. They swept through North America.
So that was last winter.
That was two winters ago. Last winter, we had less open water, but still had the albedo effect. This year, we had even less open. It's still quite open, but the part around Asia, northern Alaska, was almost totally open and into October. And the net result was the first 6 days of October. So much snow and snow was picked up off that Arctic ocean surface, deposited in Asia, so that Asia, north of the 45-degree parallel, was 30% covered with snow in 6 days. So what happens
then?
That
was this year.
Yes, this year. So what happens then is that sunlight hits that snow, bounces off into space. The energy is lost to Earth. For one thing, when sunlight hits open ground, it converts to infrared, heats the air above it. CO2 then redirects some of it back down, and that's what's the so-called greenhouse effect. When you have sunlight hitting open snow or ice, it reflects at wavelengths that CO2 does not intercept, so it gets colder. You lose the heat to the to the Earth. So we had that happening in Asia. So that means that the polar high, this big blob of cold air, got colder earlier. And that means, again, colder, high contrast between the poles and the equator. And the poles are colder, the equator's warmer. Guess what? You have that undulation.
And the we've been hearing a lot about lake effect snow.
Yes. And that's exactly what we had in the Arctic.
And so
we had
now,
ocean effect snow, but the same effect.
I was talking to somebody today about you coming on, and I said, so more people are going to know what lake effect snow is because of what happened. And so what does he say? What is lake effect snow? So he's heard you before, and he knows about what's going on in Buffalo and the vicinity. So obviously the TV networks are not making lake effect snow clear to what.
All right. Let me try to give you a good explanation of what happens. If you have a high-speed wind going over open water, what do you get? You get waves. What waves do is they increase the surface area of the lake itself. This is very important because if you have Lake Erie, which is 100, 150 miles long and 50 miles across, and you increase its surface area, you're basically making the lake bigger. And that water rushing across these waves with increased surface area picks up moisture from that, dumps it as snow because it's cold, and you get much, much more snow than you normally would get. That's what the lake effect is. An open lake, wind blowing over that water, evaporating it.
Ice to make a barrier between
exactly,
the water and wind.
Exactly. Once the lakes freeze, the lake effect snow stops. And that's what's happening in the Arctic also. The Arctic Ocean, north of Asia, is now totally frozen. So there is no more, quote, ocean effect, lake effect snow. But the damage has already been done. Asia already has snow cover over half of it. Northern Canada is almost all under snow. Mm. And, of course, this lake effect snow that we're having here from all the Great Lakes, by the way, not just Lake Erie and Lake Ontario, which are near New York. Watertown got an awful lot of snow. Buffalo got a lot of snow. But so did Holland, Michigan. And the parts on the eastern shore of Michigan, the same way.
And you're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And my guest is Time Weissmuller. And where have you been these days?
I was supposed to be lecturing attending a climate session at NASA Johnson. And it was canceled because they decided to renovate the building that I was going to be in. So I had to be down in New Orleans for some personal estate reasons that I was involved with. So I've been in Florida. I actually flew up in the same packet of energy that is going to be creating a storm, most likely that's going to hit here tomorrow, a coastal storm. And it's probably going to deposit snow here. We're going to have almost a white Thanksgiving. I actually talked to an audience in Brooklyn last week, last Tuesday, and I said, you know, we haven't had snow in Thanksgiving in 15 years, but there's a 30% chance that we're going to have it this year because of the effect of that high temperature contrast between the equator and the poles. It's already happening. We had this big warm spike that just came up. We had a cold spike the week before. We're going to have another cold blast coming through on Thanksgiving for the same. Again, what you have is warm air moving toward the pole, cold air moving south toward the equator, mixing. And when they mix off the coast of North America, we get ocean effect snow from a storm that's off the coast, dragging that moisture over colder air and dumping it as snow. I expect Hartford, Connecticut may get a half a foot of snow out of the storm. And where I live up in Maine, we're going to get a foot.
So you have warm, very moist air coming from the south, and then you have the cold air coming from the north, and they meet. And so the moisture, it becomes snow.
Well, because we live near the coast here in New York, you have moisture availability from the ocean. When you have the wind coming off the water, and again, the surface area of the ocean then increases, increasing the evaporation rate, and that moisture, if it falls into air that's colder, will fall as snow. I suspect the Thanksgiving here will probably start out as rain, but end as snow. Should be really interesting.
From your point of view, interesting.
Yeah. Well, now, you know, as far as the rest of the winter is concerned, the pattern is fairly well set. There's two Joes that I'm familiar with, Joe DeLeo and Joe Bastardi. These guys are professional weather forecasters. They're seeing kind of the same pattern that I'm seeing. It's consistent. It's going to mean more snow this winter. It's not going to be as cold as last winter, by the way. That so-called polar vortex was unique because of a real strengthening El Nino. That's not going to happen this winter. But because it won't be quite as cold, it means that the air will be able to hold more moisture. So in a not as cold winter as last year, we may be getting more snow this winter. Mm. We certainly will not have the no-snow winter, which, if you recall, 3 years ago, I predicted on the station in November, I said, we're just not going to see snow this winter. And we didn't. None of it.
Yeah.
Because the jet stream was flat across the Canadian border, and the snow never came down here. And I remember about 5 years ago, I was in your studio down at Wall Street, and said, you know, we're going to get a lot of snow, and we had a 13-inch storm the next day. Which chased me all the way back home to Maine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I've been telling people you predicted the polar vortex like 2 months before it happened.
Well, I didn't call it the polar vortex.
No, you didn't call it that. That name hadn't been coined yet. But right. What it was, you told us about.
Yeah, it was the polar high. Basically, your fingers of the polar high sweeping through. And the neat thing was, John Holdren, President Obama's science advisor, in the middle of January, went on TV and explained what happened using almost the same words that we used on your show, except we did this in November.
Yeah, right.
And he did it after it had started. But again, the signs were clear. The temperature contrasts were obvious. Seeing the temperature profiles of this little equatorial countercurrent this year was fascinating. It's like I got all excited about this show. I was,
And well, because we're going to have alternating warm and cold because of the jet stream being such an undulating instead of level, does that mean that all this snow is going to melt quickly?
Which is great, by the way. You will get periods of melting. And now, unfortunately, I shouldn't say great, because in Buffalo, the poor people there, yeah, not only they have 6 feet of snow on their roofs, but when you get rain on that snow, the snow retains the rain, and we have like 30 roofs collapsing,
yeah, right,
up there.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed blessing. But you will get moderating periods, and then again, severe cold, but not as severe as last year. Last year was pretty tough.
Well, the flat roofs of apartment buildings.
That's a problem when you have snow accumulation. If you notice, most of the roofs in Buffalo are sloped.
Yeah, right.
But when you're piling up snow 6 and 8 feet high, and it sticks to that roof, and the water stays in it, there's nothing that's going to help it. Flat roofs are a problem. Drainage is a problem, because the drains freeze up when it gets really cold, and then the water piles up on the roofs. I don't think we're going to have that bigger problem in New York City, but no bets there.
Would you recommend people who maintain buildings with flat roofs to get that snow off those roofs?
The first thing you need to do is make sure your drains are cleaned and cleared. Because, usually like what happens here in New York a lot, you get rain first. You want that rain off the roof before the snow accumulates.
So I'll have to make sure I'll tell the super of my building all this stuff.
A lot of times leaves will clog the drains, and people aren't aware of that.
Yeah.
That's very important to make sure they're clean.
And so if we're going to have warm and cold, but you say there's going to be a lot of snow.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot of different snowfalls, is what you're saying.
I think we're going to get a number of snowfalls. We probably get 7 or 8 in total. And that's a lot of snow. And by the way, when you get that snow, you're putting that magic word albedo on the ground. And the albedo reflects the incoming sunlight, so it doesn't get a chance to warm that quickly after a snowfall. Even though you may have warm air coming up from the south, passing from North Carolina and D.C., by the time it gets here, it's still moving over colder ground. And so you're not going to get total meltdowns.
So that warm and cold alternating is not going to be as severe as far as the warm goes.
Yeah. It will not help you as much as you think.
Okay, that's I guess what we were wondering.
Yeah.
Now, how long is this going to last?
I think through February.
Through February. What about March? What's March going to be like, you figure?
March, last year I predicted one big snowstorm in March. I was wrong. Last year, the weather conditions were really good. In the third week of March, we got dumped on by rain, and it was borderline rain. Had you moved up 50 miles or 100 miles north, you got snow. So my track record isn't perfect, Ken.
Was it last year or the year before that you were predicting either a cold spell or a warm spell, and we got one on the next to last day of March? Last year?
Yeah. And it was cold. And we had a delayed spring last year, too. Again, because that polar high was so large and so huge, that spring took a long time to clear. Even though, some temperature records show that it was quite warm last year on a global basis, that wasn't true here. And again, the temperature records are a little strange. If you're using ground-based thermometers, most of them are near or in urban areas. And what happens is that consistently for the last couple of years, we've had high temperatures, which are fairly consistent, but low temperatures, which have risen. So the maximum lows aren't as, the minimum lows aren't as low as they normally would be. And on balance, then the temperature averages higher. So yes, it looks like it's a warmer year. But when we use satellite readings, which cover the entire globe, we're far from the warmest year ever. because the satellites go over rural areas, urban areas equally, and give you maybe a more accurate average for temperature. Again, air temperatures have been relatively flat for 17, 18 years worldwide, even as ocean temperatures continue to rise, except for one ocean, and that's the Southern Ocean. The Southern Ocean is the ocean around Antarctica, and that has not gone up. In fact, it's gone down in temperature because the donut of ice around Antarctica this year was a record 20 million kilometers, and it's floating ice. Now, what happens down in the south is that you are switching 80% absorbing ocean. Sunlight falls on ocean. When you fly over an ocean, it looks dark because almost all the light's being absorbed by the ocean. If you have floating ice, it's the other way around. It's reflected off, and again, it's the albedo effect of that ice. So you're taking 80% absorbing ocean, flipping it to 70% reflecting ice and snow, and it, again, reflects at wavelengths that CO2 doesn't intercept. So the ice donut around Antarctica is larger. The temperature in the southern hemisphere, as a result, is cooler, and the oceans, it's the first ocean, by the way, of all the oceans that we track, where the temperature is actually declining. And it's more the effect of taking a glass of water, sticking an ice cube in the water, and the water gets cold. So then,
so how far up is that cold? You know, how far into the Pacific and Atlantic and Indian Oceans has that donut come? Yeah.
It reached within 300 miles of the tip of South America. That's pretty close. It's floating. And I read yesterday, and I don't have the citation, and I'm uncomfortable doing that, telling you about things which I don't have the citation, but apparently they sent some robot submarines underneath the ice, and the floating ice around Antarctica is apparently, where they measured it, thicker than they expected. Now, I don't know what the parameters are. I don't know what they expected. I don't know how thin it is. But that was a report I read literally 2 days ago. And because I was traveling, I really wasn't catching up with the stuff as I should. I try to make sure that I am up to speed on stuff every single day. Spent enough time on my computer. There's enough research going on. And when I do give a presentation, it is always up to date, up to the minute, as is this broadcast.
As is this broadcast, indeed. And you're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And I am with Time Weissmuller, who every year predicts what the winter and the spring will be like. And eventually you'll also be able to see Tom on Environment TV, because Charlie Olson of Environment TV is here videoing this show. And
he just made me move so he can get both of us together in the
oh,
same shot.
Oh, is that it? I was wondering, he's signaling, and I don't understand TV signals.
Neither do
Radio signals I get. So at any rate, so we've talked about the undulating jet stream causing warm and cold, but the warm won't be as warm enough to mitigate the cold. And now, how long, you know, what will the spring be like?
Now, I expect
early spring, late spring.
I expect this pattern to last, which would mean again a late spring like we had last year. There are different models portraying different aspects of it, which show slight differences. But the ones that I have access to, all show that this pattern is going to stick around for quite a while. The La Niñito, if that works, may be a permanent fixture. I don't think so. I'd like to see an El Niño surface, but it hasn't happened yet. And an El Niño will, again, send much, much more warm air north to Alaska. And a friend of mine in Alaska called up and said, Tom, when are you going to send the snow here? he lives in Anchorage, and It really hasn't snowed much there. I was in Alaska last month, by the way, photographing the eclipse. The eclipse of the moon, where you could see the planet Uranus underneath the moon in the same frame. And no one alive will ever see that again, that particular combination. I'll show it to you later on my iPhone. Took it through a telescope, and Anchorage was the right place to do it. If I had rented a dog sled and gone north of Fairbanks, I could have seen the planet graze the bottom of the moon. But I got some nice, clean, clear photographs of the moon doing that. And I was on a radio in Alaska and talking about climate and things like that, too.
So you expect the spring to be cold for a while?
Cool.
Cool.
Yes, yeah.
Like how long? You're talking?
Into April. Which means in Washington, D.C., the cherry blossoms will be a little bit late. A little bit. A week or so later than usual. I've never made a cherry blossom prediction. This is going to be a first, you know.
Well, I mean, I'm always think, you know, when I talk about think of spring, I always think of bird migration, and I'm wondering if the birds will be early or late this coming year. So I guess the May birds will be around the same time as they usually are, and the April ones will be later.
I think so. You know, this is not as severe a winter as last year was going to be. In Maine, we had one day when the temperature got like 23 below zero, which is unusual where I live in Maine. Mm. Worst I've had was 29 below zero. But it's you get to see Arctic sea smoke coming off the ocean.
Arctic sea smoke?
Yes. This is water immediately evaporating into moisture, which half of it freezes, and it looks like smoke drifting across the water. And it only happens if the temperature is like, right, you know, 15, 20 below zero. And you have a nice light wind. It's very pretty. But, you know, down off the American coast, we actually experienced it when you had that, what they call polar vortex, that really cold fingers of the polar high. And the polar high is huge when you have sufficient albedo that makes it colder early enough in the season, and that's exactly what we had this year.
And, you know, people look forward to the show so much, and we've covered, you know, with the winter and the spring. You want to take some listener phone calls, see what they
sure.
have to say?
Sure.
Should be interesting. There's somebody there already. 212-209-2900, and you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing? My name is Hassan Abdullah. I'm actually the producer for the next show, and I need Max to call me ASAP at 908-202-8012.
Well, you know you're on the air. Okay, your phone number just went over the air.
Oh, it don't matter. It's too late for all that. Could you please have him call me? It's very important.
Okay, well, he monitors the air. 212-209-2900. If you have a call for Tom and not for Max. Max isn't even in the room.
that's one of the neatest calls I've ever gotten.
Okay. 212-209-2900. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I have a question. When it does snow, you said it'd be 7 or 8 times. How many inches will it be?
That's a tough one to call, and it happens to be a function of how close the coastal storm is to the New York area. If it starts out as snow, I expect we're going to get at least one storm this year coming up to 20 inches. And that's a big storm for the New York area. And a couple of 6 inches, 8 inches, maybe a 13 or so. We're going to get a good amount of snow. Last year, I predicted the snow total in Hartford, Connecticut. And by dumb luck, I got within 3 inches of what the total was. So it was going to be over 50. They ended up with 53. This year, I think it's probably going to be about the same. And we're going to probably start out in the Hartford area with about 6 inches tomorrow.
So when you say 53 inches total, you're talking 53 inches Hartford or New York?
That was Hartford.
So what do you think the total will be here?
New York total, you're going to be in the 40s, I think. And that's a big winter.
Yeah, that is a big winter.
It's a big winter. We've only had like 4 or 5 of those in the last 20 years. So
thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Thanks for being on.
212-209-2900, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I'm very concerned watching the chemtrails in the sky. I do pretty seriously believe that they do affect the weather. Now, have you been watching them, looking at them, and what do you think? Are they affecting our weather?
Kind of, but very little, and I'll tell you why. Chemtrails are, and There are three different kinds of trails you can see in the atmosphere. There's chemtrails, there's contrails, and there's ship tracks. They're all visible from space. They all add to the albedo effect, meaning that sunlight hits those chemtrails, contrails, and ship tracks and bounces off and doesn't reach the ground or the ocean where it normally would be observed, convert to infrared, and then get bounced back. So, yes, they do have an effect, but it's not a severe effect. Albedo itself, by the way, is an interesting statistic. Albedo, if you change the albedo by 1%, just 1%, you are changing global average temperatures by half a degree centigrade. That's huge.
Wow.
It is huge. CO2, for example, if you double CO2, let's say from 400 parts per million to 800 parts per million, we're looking at about 1.8 degrees temperature effect. And albedo has a much, much stronger effect. One of my colleagues at NASA, Hal Dwaran, down in Houston, has just put out an 87-page paper that I'm trying to convince him to send to the journals and get published. If you send me an email at tom@colderside.com, I will ask Hal to send it to you directly. It's if you're really into the effect of carbon dioxide and on the planet, you need to read that paper. But albedo, again, is a much more powerful effect and operates over a much shorter time period. We're not going to double CO2 until, let's say, the end of the century if things get really bad. But albedo can change very quickly. And contrails, chemtrails, and ship tracks also add to the albedo effect. La Nina, of course, is much more powerful.
Is that paper online?
It's not online yet, but I can make it available. All right?
Okay. I'll link to it on my Ecolinks page.
Excellent. I'll work it. Maybe I'll stick it on in Dropbox and give you a Dropbox link, Ken. All right? And that should take care of it. With Hal's permission. Hopefully he's listening to this broadcast.
Okay. And there are two calls, and they're both gone. What happens is if it rings so many times, Verizon will automatically cut the calls. So don't get paranoid. It's not that BAI is cutting it off or Pacific is cutting it off. That's how Verizon works, so that you don't call a number and it rings forever.
So I shouldn't talk too long, basically.
I think people would rather hear you than any one person who might call. 212-209-2900, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Mercy calling, and I want to talk about squirrels.
Yes.
I was over in Carl Shores Park the other day, over by the mayor's house, and there was a really puffed up squirrel. He had a lot of fur, and I thought, oh my God, we're in for a really nasty winter. It's going to be mean. It's going to be cold and a lot of snow, because that squirrel was ready to hide out.
Well, you know, Mercy, keep in mind, squirrels, like birds, can puff up their fur if it gets cold. And the week before, it was very, very cold. Now, I don't know what days you were out there, but if it wasn't that cold period, that squirrel was probably protecting itself.
Well, it had gotten a little warmer, and that's why I think he was out, because he was not around when it was cold. The birds weren't around either. It was very quiet. When it gets real cold, they hide, yeah.
I'm not so sure that the squirrel effect is like the woolly caterpillars or some of the other things, but I don't use that in my predictions.
Oh, okay. All right. You don't consult the squirrels? No.
Although I have noticed that juncos show up early if the snow is early, and they show up late if the snow is late. So somehow the birds know.
Believe me, birds and squirrels have a really good sense of what the world is all about. And they probably have sensory organs that we don't have and have no clue about. So following them makes a lot of sense, and you're an avid birder as far as that goes, so your wisdom comes in the show that way, too.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Any other questions, Mercy?
No, that was my big question.
Okay.
All right, I'll let you get somebody else.
Yeah, there's a lot
have
of calls.
Have a good evening.
A lot of calls coming
okay,
in.
Bye.
212-209-2900, you're on the air.
Yeah, it's Tom from the Bronx here. I'd like to say the snow that took place up in Buffalo, New York, there was a claim that the water was warm and the cold air came over and caused the snow. Am I right?
Well, it's not that the water was warm. It was warmer than you would expect. But the fact that the water had no ice in it was the biggest thing. In other words, that cold wind blowing over water that doesn't have an ice blanket is going to release moisture. And there was a lot of moisture to release because the wind speed was very high. We had wind speeds 35 miles an hour. That really chops up the lake. And when you chop the lake up, again, like I said before, you increase the surface area and you make even more moisture available than you normally would get if the lake was placid.
Well, what if, like, California was able to have, like, if they had, like, cold, make the water cold with like, refrigerating cold, and the winds were blowing over it, would that cause it to rain?
It's more the fact that the water is open that allows that moisture release. And you're right. If it doesn't snow, it will rain. And what you...
Well, they need it out there. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they could do something like that?
Well, what we have to do is figure out a way to get the jet stream to blow in such a way that it will pick up that Pacific moisture and drop it on the Sierra Nevada. You know, we have in California, they have what's called a marine layer. And the marine layer is air that is cooled, hangs near the coast. The San Francisco fogs, for instance, come from the marine layer. And sometimes it's actually warmer above and colder in the fog. And you get the same thing down in Los Angeles. But you have to have a high wind to get the marine layer to blow hard enough so that you wring actual moisture out of the air, not just fog, but actual rain. And if it falls in the Sierra Nevada, it'll fall as snow, and that will fill up the reservoirs, which will then replenish what's going on in the cities.
And you're listening to Ecologic on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. And I'm Ken Gale. I'm here every 2 weeks from 8 until the Muslim State of Mind at 9. And in 2 weeks, Sandra Steingraber will be my guest, which I can't wait. She's one of my very favorite environmentalists, I mean, of all time. And I remember years ago, I would read a lot of articles saying that eventually the climate change was going to create a permanent El Nino condition. And that never happened. And I'm not seeing that in articles anymore. So why would they predict it then and they stopped predicting it? Has there been a change?
No, Ken, I think someone just made a mistake. They just did not realize that the El Nino, La Nina situation is an oscillating phenomenon. It varies. It's the length of time that the condition persists that governs the weather. Mm. But it will, like I say, in February this year, I was almost certain we were going to have an El Nino, and it didn't happen. We've had a long, persistent La Nina with a couple of breaks. 1998 was a huge El Nino, and lasted for almost 2 years. The La Nina condition has been dominant for the last 15 years, with a couple of little spikes. One of those spikes is going to become what they call a super El Nino, and then we'll have real temperature contrast. Right now, we're kind of in the middle. We are tending toward the El Nino side, by the way, and that's why the contrast is higher, but we're not there yet.
Okay. More calls. 212-209-2900. You're on the air.
Yeah, just one more question, sir. What would happen if you were able to take salt water, ocean water, and put it under like a magnifying glass with the sun beating down on it and pick up the moisture and you have like your fresh water out of it that comes out of it?
Well, that's kind of like the desalinization that they do in places like Israel, where they have no natural water and they try to get water out of the oceans. Keep in mind, if you take a magnifying glass and you block the sun so that it focuses on one point in the water and boils off the water, you are actually preventing that same sunlight from hitting the part that isn't covered by the focal point of that heat source. So you can evaporate water, but it's not a very efficient way to do it because you're blocking sunlight from getting the rest of the water. The best thing to do to evaporate water is to get high-speed wind going over it, the kind of wind that you're probably going to get tomorrow afternoon when the storm comes here.
212-209-2900, you're on the air.
On the air, hi. I have a question for Echologic.
Go for it.
Go for it? Okay. I can do that at this moment?
Yes.
Terrific. Okay. The question is as follows, because there's another question already I hear on the radio. The question is, actually two parts. Is there any way you can predict the temperature trends and water trends for the next 5 to 10 years and develop a kind of graph, because we're looking at the next 10, actually 15 years very critically, and how the weather's going to affect those years.
The truth is, I'm not able to do that. There are people who do that via computer-generated mathematical models.
Right.
Some of them are correct. Some of them are incorrect. Most of the computer models that I have been exposed to all have overshot temperatures on the high side, quite dramatically, actually. In other words, the air temperatures, except for two of those 90 models, the air temperatures were all predicted to be higher than, in fact, they really were.
Okay, so that sort of lends to the logic of why all the folks to the right poo-poo the science of this whole thing. Mm-hmm. But that's an aside. It's not an easy thing to do, but we have a special reason for trying to plot that, because we have an organization that's betting its very being on the year 2030, when we want to get carbon footprints to a certain lower level. Otherwise, the planet isn't going to fare too well.
All right, we've got another call. 212-209-2900.
Hello.
You're on the air.
I am now?
Yes, you are.
Okay, the question I have is the weather modification and weather warfare possible that we've been hearing about on WBAI?
Well, I'm not aware of that, Ken, so if it's been on WBAI...
It may or may not be true. Not everybody on BAI...
Let me tell you what they say they're doing. They're using this geoengineering project, which supposedly is depositing nanoparticles in the upper atmosphere and the stratosphere, and they say they're heating it up with high-energy RF energy and creating updrafts and creating storms and droughts in various parts of the world.
Well, let me give you a more practical result of what's going on. You know that in China they are building coal-fired plants, and the particulates that come out of the coal-fired plants kind of waft across the Pacific Ocean, and what they do is they serve as nuclei for water to condense on when humidity conditions are appropriate. So the fact that these nuclei are coming across means that we are getting a slight increase in albedo, because clouds are, in fact, albedo. I would not call that warfare. In the case of the Chinese, they're just trying to generate electricity to power their people. The net effect is a weather modification. I'm not quite sure that's the answer you're looking for, but
probably not. And we are about running out of time. So, any lectures coming up in the
No, but you know, I had an interesting one, and again with the open Arctic, I lectured at an insurance organization in Houston, Texas. And the insurance companies wanted to know if they can insure vessels crossing the open Arctic when it opens up. And when does the ice form? When does it come back? That kind of thing. So that was one of the places I did lecture on, and gave, again, a similar forecast that I'm giving now. We have some other weather experts there also. Jill Hassling, who runs a weather research center in Houston, was also on my panel. So there are practical aspects to forecasting, particularly the Arctic forecasting, which are very important commercially.
And your website is?
It's colderside.com, www.colderside.com. And again, I'm going to try to put a link up to Hal Dwarin's paper, a Dropbox link, because it's a long paper. Mm-hmm. And if you're really interested in this CO2 relationship, I think you'll want to read that paper.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And I'm sorry I didn't get to all of your calls. I knew there'd be a lot of calls for you because they've been emailing me for at least a month when Tom is going to be on. So people look forward to these predictions every year. So, and you've been right for the last five. So
let's see if I can make a six in a row.
It's. I remember what you said last year. That eventually I'm going to be wrong, and I said not on my show.
Thanks, Ken. It's a wonderful vote of confidence.
And coming up next is the Muslim State of Mind, and I'll be here in 2 weeks with Dr. Simon Graber. She's in jail right now, and I'll go out with the late Ray Corona with Listen to the Earth. You get the full version of one of the 29-second segments in the theme song. So thanks a lot.
See it riding up the river, heading right this way. Black smoke from the power plant, another sour day. Everybody's got allergies. Young people move away. If you want electricity, that's the price they make you pay. Did they ever hear of solar power? Ever see a windmill go? Feel the pull of an ocean wave? We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen to the earth. We use oil to heat buildings, but it does much more. Fouls the air with emissions, greenhouse gases soar. We'll do anything for oil. Drill the planet to the core. Trade a beach for a waste site. Bomb a country, start a war. Did they ever hear of solar power? Ever see a windmill go? Feel the pull of an ocean wave? The heat from a volcano? There's so much we could do. We could know if we listen to the earth. When I go outside at night, I really want to see stars. Not the blur of deadly smog around a planet full of scars.
My name is Dan Ingram, and I'm a WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say because the people in power don't want to hear it, and I love that.
I have to celebrate you, baby.
Hi, I'm Ken Gale of WBAI's Tuesday evening environmental show Ecologic. One of the cool things about being a BAI buddy is that you get to decide what WBAI is worth to you. Are we worth more than your cable TV or $10 a month? 20, 100, a million. Just go to the WBAI.org website and sign up with your credit card. You'll barely notice it. In return, you get a WBAI tote bag to show off, free or discounted entry to special WBAI events, and other perks. Another cool thing about being a BAI buddy is less fundraising interruptions to your favorite programs. Go to WBAI.org. You can donate in the name of your favorite show, like Ecologic.
Sego, this is John Kane. Join me and First Voices Indigenous Radio for a special 3-hour First Voices on Thursday, November 27th. That's Thanksgiving Day, Thursday morning, from 9 till noon. I will have a solid lineup of guests throughout the program, including Teogason Ghost Horse. I know you've missed him, and he'll return for this special program, along with a quality lineup of other guests. We'll go beyond the myths of happy pilgrims and Indians with an educational and entertaining program. That's Thanksgiving morning from 9 till noon on First Voices Indigenous Radio on WBAI.